Oh, yeah, come on in. Sorry, I'm a little allergy head today. I've got the thick kind of, I don't know, irritated throat. It's been going on for like 3 days now. Ugh. So hope y'all are having a good day. We're going to get started. You want coaching? You just need to raise your hand. That is how we do things. You look pretty today. Thank you. It's a new sweater. I got it on Friday. I took my son to the mall. He likes to spend time together. He loves to go to malls. And so we went, and y'all, I gotta just say this before I coach someone. This is how you know you've got big balls. So I'm having this procedure done on my face called a cool peel. And if you want to know what it is, basically you go and they it's like they I don't know, it's some kind of laser, and they just burn your, I mean, you can smell the skin burning when they're doing it. And so they do it all over your face and your neck. And the next day, I mean, I look like I was laid out on a Florida beach in the middle of July from sun up to sundown with no sunscreen. I mean, red, I was as red as this mouse ball, like red. And Logan had wanted to go, and I didn't have much time because I've been doing things. And so I was like, well, let's go. And I didn't really look in the mirror. I was just like, you know, it can't be that bad. We get there, and I go like to one place, and I look in a mirror, and I'm like, oh my God, my face is so red. I am sure people were looking at me the entire time, but oh well. All right, Lisa, you're first. Let's get you up. And if you're wondering, I have a little makeup on today, but it's really itchy for a few days, and you just feel nasty. Like my skin, like you just feel the, like it feels like sand. And I just think, oh my God, I'm the dirtiest person ever. There's just, it takes a few days for all that skin comes off, and then it's like baby butt smooth. So, all right, what are we talking about, Lisa? Because I bet it's not the face.
Although I'd love to hear more about that. I also like skincare.
I do too. My God, I'm a whore for that shit. Like, oh, yes, but I could talk about it all day. We'll talk about you though. What's going on with you?
Great. I'm super excited about the newsletter today, and I'm excited for the January topic because that is actually what I'm struggling with. So I don't want to wait until then. I need to like make sure I'm not regaining more between now and then. I'm just having tr I had started off so strong a couple years ago, lost over 35 pounds, have regained quite a bit of it, but not all of it. I'm proud of that I've hung on that much. And I just catch myself like stopping and starting. Like I'll think like this is it, I got it, I'm all back in, and then a couple days will go by and I'll stop doing, I'll stop tracking my food, I'll stop, and then I'll try again, and I'm having trouble like keeping it going.
Do you think you're supposed to just like when you start something new, you're supposed to just it's supposed to just keep happening? Like, what do you think is supposed to be happening? Because what you're describing is exactly what's supposed to happen, except there's one difference that I think is probably happening, which is when you stop and start, you think you're doing it wrong. And I'm like, it's kind of how the brain works. I don't know how we're going to, you got to change your attitude because this is exactly how the, it'd be like saying, I don't know. I wake up every day thinking I don't want to breathe so much. And no matter how hard I try, these lungs, they just keep taking in all this air. Could you imagine how frustrating your life would be if you were just like determined that you're, the way you breathe is just wrong?
I think for me, the first time around when I first joined and lost so much weight, like I didn't struggle with that. I mean,
Yeah,
I
you
was.
did. No, there's no way that your brain said, we're on a new plan. And then you were just like, 35 pounds down. I didn't have one problem. Never forgot to do anything. Everything was perfect. Like I just changed everything on one dime and never looked back. Is that how it really happened? Or is that your fuzzy recollection?
There's definitely some fuzziness.
You never had like a do you have any of your old habit trackers?
Yes, I do.
Probably look at them and see how many times you didn't check something.
Yeah.
You have any of your old discovery worksheets?
I think I kept, I think I have some of those put away.
So let me just point out the obvious. If you had discovery worksheets, you didn't do it perfectly. Although right now you're like, when I lost 35 pounds, it was like this, oh my God, I'm just floating through the air. It just happened. No. The only difference between that time and now is when you've regained, you have shame. When you joined that time, you didn't have anything to be ashamed of. You're just like, well, we're just here. We're starting afresh. Like anytime we have something fresh, we don't have that. Like you might, some people will like start and be afraid they can't do it because they have failed in the past. But you won't be like carrying shame of no BS with you because you don't have the shame yet. That is literally the only difference for you.
That
Is
makes a lot
this
of sense.
time, it's like it shouldn't be happening this way. The last time was so much easier. And the last time really wasn't easier. The last time you just had different thoughts like, this is probably going to work. I'm willing to try this. You know, like, this is new to me. That was the only difference. Because I promise you, and in fact, it's so funny you said this. I literally just recorded the first two lessons. Like I was coming in hot because I was just watching my clock going, oh my God, I've got to finish recording this lesson. And I'm looking at the time ticking down. I was like, am I going to finish? Because if I don't finish, I have to start all the way over. Yeah. So I'm always just like, so, but I timed it well. So anyway, but the lesson, it literally talks about how, we think that we're supposed to have streaks in order to lose weight. Like, I think you have this idea, I'm supposed to restart. And if I say I'm going to stop at enough, I should just be stopping at enough. If I say I'm going to plan from here on, I should just be planning. And our brain doesn't work that way. The way our brain works is very fast, and it's just like, it just does things. And sometimes we don't catch it till after the fact. And the biggest problem y'all have is that when you catch it after the fact, you mislabel that as, well, let's do this. Let's just see what you say to yourself. When is the most recent restart you've had? Like a few days ago, a few weeks ago?
Probably a couple weeks ago when I was, like had my planner and was trying to do those
We
things.
had a freshie. All right. So we like probably what you did was you're like, I'm going to hit the reset button. Okay. When you hit the reset button, tell me like the things you do to like say, this is what I'm now going to be doing in your mind. I'm going to write them down.
I get my planner ready.
Okay.
When I'm resetting, I'm going to start planning my food for the day, and then I want to, in the evening, then do the reflection on what I had and where I was, and then keep my statistics. And then
Okay.
the plan is then at the end of the week to like examine that. But honestly, here in the last like year, I rarely make it to the week to even like look at that much data because I just stop doing it.
Okay. And why don't you even like if you start and you stop, why do you not look at the data to figure out like what it is that, all right, let's, what is the first thing that usually breaks? Like, so, like, you put a lot of emphasis on planning. So, if you had to guess, like, the last time you started, the first chink in the armor is I notice I don't do this thing.
The like the even reflecting at the end of the day, because I know you don't have to plan your meals, but the important thing would be to like give it some thought at the end of the day on how I did.
Okay.
And yeah, I feel like that's the part that then when that falls off, then it all
And why?
stops.
Like, why does not reflecting at the end of the day, what does that mean to you? If I don't reflect at the end of the day, now what's happened?
Um, Like that, I'm not doing it then.
And what does it mean? I'm not doing what?
Like that, I'm not doing the program, not because I mean, even when I say I'm off, like I am still thinking about some things. I'm still overeating, but but I am like thinking about it. And
All right.
but there is something about like I feel like when I stop doing the like writing part of it and the more formal part of it, that then I'm not doing it, and then I, you know, kind of stop. Like everything starts to peter off from there. Like then I'm not thinking about it as much. I'm not listening to the recordings
And why
and.
do you think that? What do you make it mean that? So we've got something super, I want to just set, lay this out very factually. Okay. You decide to start, you get your planner, you make a plan for the day, you don't reflect, and so then you just dead stop. Why is that like between not reflecting and dead stopping? In between those two things, is something going on in your head about what that means? Otherwise, what would we do if the story was, I hit the restart button, I made a planner, Tuesday I didn't reflect. Period. What if that was like literally the boring fucking story? What do you think you would do on Wednesday?
I would be more inclined to try it again.
Why?
Because it wouldn't be so all or nothing.
What else would you might do if you weren't making it all or nothing?
I'd probably be more inclined to do some of the other things that aren't the writing it down, the thinking about it, the listening.
Yeah. You might also just reflect the next morning, thinking it's never too late. You might just skip it for that day and think, oh, I'll try again tonight. You might examine, I wonder why I didn't reflect last night. Is nighttime just like a bad time for me to reflect? I mean, even though I think I'm going to do it at night, but if I'm tired as fuck every night, probably the worst time for me to do a reflection. I'm gonna tell you right now, there is nothing happening in Corinne's life at night. I don't plan to do shit at night. I know me. I'm not gonna do stuff. I'm not gonna journal. I'm not gonna reflect. I'm not gonna plan. I'm not gonna do anything. I don't like to do anything at night. Now, for sometimes that's not the reason. It's, well, I know what I ate today. What was on that plan? So if I reflect, then I have to listen to my inner critic and all of her fucking opinions about what it was. So I'm just not going to do the reflection so I don't have to feel bad. So we just have to like see that like when you don't do something, it's actually valuable. Super valuable information. And right now you're saying when I don't do something, there's something wrong with me. Instead of like, fuck, every answer is on the other side of figuring out what happens in those moments. I wonder why. This, like, what if it's just a timing issue? And this whole time you're just like, you're such a fuck up, you can't lose weight, you're always starting stops, what's wrong with you? And it's just like, no, you know what it is? I'm fucking tired at night. This is the most terrible time for me to pick. So, what do you think's going on? Like when I say all of that,
I think some of it could be timing because, well, but I'm not a morning person. I want to sleep as long as possible before I have to get up and start my day, so I don't like to add anything extra in there. But I do catch myself not wanting to do my reflection until like I'm just about ready for bed because what if I what if I eat something else like after I've done my reflection and then I have to like fix it? I'm like saying it out loud. I'm like, well, that's crazy. You could just, edit it the
Reflect
next
on it
day.
tomorrow.
Yeah.
Make a note.
Yeah. But I think that's part of the like perfectionism of it that I need to let go of.
I don't think we let go of perfectionism. I think you have to understand it. I think we need to figure out, like, from just a clinical view of it, like, this is something that I need to be more aware of. Like, I feel like your start and stops is an invitation to work on your perfectionism. Like, y'all want to say, I just want to let it go. This ain't Elsa. We are not in Frozen, and there's no song coming for you. You don't let go of tendencies, but you can get really aware of them. Notice when they're happening. You can get really good at talking to yourself through them. Like, I know you think it's a big deal that, we missed a day. And, reminding yourself, like, this is the part of weight loss that I have to work on. The worst thing for somebody to lose weight is to think that they're going to get there perfectly. If you set the bar so high that you can't miss days, that you can't have any room for error, you're literally working against your nervous system, your brain's wiring, and just human nature. You're working against life circumstances. That is a lot of shit to try to control just to lose a few pounds. And it's an impossible puzzle to solve. And that's why we just circle the drain all the time. I think you've got to figure out, like, it's not letting go of perfectionism. It's like, how do I get just really aware of when it's deciding my future? Because what you're going to learn and start is going to upset you tremendously if you think you've got to overcome your perfectionism. It's just going to be a matter of we got to do small things. And every single time it does not happen the way you think it should, you've got to become the new habit has to be to not stop. Your habit right now, literally, is just a habit to stop. And the habit has to become next best decision, next best decision. Like, if your personal rule is I need streaks in order to lose weight, you have to break the rules because nobody loses weight with streaks. I've never met anyone. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, you didn't even lose your 35 pounds with streaks. You lost it through learning. You lost it because you did not decide these things mean I can't lose weight. It's like these things mean that's the next thing to work on. Because that's more of the truth. Because if we didn't have shit to work on, we'd all be thin. So let's think about this. How is that? When you are, let's say, let's do this. What is the actual definition of not doing the no BS plan?
Well, when I think about it, it's so flexible is there a version of not doing it? 'Cause I guess I've always done little pieces of it along the way.
The
I
way
mean,
you're doing it is the way not to do it.
yeah.
No room for error, not the way to do it. Fits and starts are just how most brains work. The way to keep things going is to understand why you're quitting them to begin with. One thing we learned today is you have to redefine what fits and starts is. You think that's bad. The people that end up being really consistent are the people who train their brain to repeatedly go again the next day and not put 3 weeks in between the next start. It's like, how do we collapse your time? How do we go from like, if it takes you 3 weeks to restart right now because you're a perfectionist, and perfectionists always have this like Eeyore ass version of themselves. On the inside, it's like, we never do anything right. We might as well not try. Let's save ourselves some heartache. We just won't do it. And it's all because we're not willing to work on our inner critic. Our inner critic is literally sitting there trying to help us. And we're just like, bitch, slap, go sit in the corner. I'm just going to avoid doing anything that will trigger you for a while. Instead of like listening to her. Like she's been trying to tell you, like when you don't reflect on a day, she's probably saying, hey, the reason why you're not reflecting is because you're not helping me see the situations any different. I can only see it through one lens, which is shitty. Help me clean my glasses. And you're just like, no. So if you want to, like, think about it, we have to figure out how do we get 3 weeks into two, and then two into one, and one into a few days, and a few days turns into one day. And then next thing you know, you make a mistake and you're just back on track immediately. It's not catastrophized, it's not blown out of proportion. It's not, you don't spend weeks and weeks beating yourself up or avoiding yourself, just avoiding yourself altogether. So if you had to guess, what is the thing that you think is happening that when you make a mistake that goes on in your like what are you making a mistake mean that makes it feel like I really should just quit doing this? It's not safe to continue.
I think some of it is like fear of not being able to do it. 'Cause like you said, the first time around, there was like, oh, it felt more possible, like because it was something new, right? And now I think the mistakes are a little of like, oh, maybe this isn't going to work. And where I've even reflected, I'm like, do I want this? Do I want to lose weight, or am I feeling okay where I'm at? And I have waffled on that off and on too. But I've listened to some other people be coached and things, and I'm like, no, you wouldn't still be here. You wouldn't still be thinking about it and give it this amount of energy if I didn't want that.
Let's figure out what you don't want because that's it's super interesting. But a lot of times people will say, maybe I don't want to lose weight. And it's what you really don't want is like, let me ask you this. Tell me the number you want to weigh.
190.
All right, 190. And let's say that I made a deal with God. And he's like, girl, you are going to save the women. They were like, they think a shot's good. Corinne's gonna be better. Anybody that signs up for your program, immediately the next day, they just weigh what they want to weigh and they never have to look back and every habit's been changed. They just get to live at 190 the rest of their life. Don't ever have to worry about emotional eating again. Like they just become the version of them that they dreamed. Would you want that?
Yeah. I think so.
All right. The reason why I ask that is because that tells us I do want to lose weight. I do want to weigh 190. Here's what I don't want. I don't want all the judgment that goes on in my head around the process. I don't want to feel bad when I mess up. I don't want to not eat things that I want when I feel bad. I don't like a lot of us. What we're really saying, it's like, and I want y'all to really hear this because it's easy to convince yourself you don't want to lose weight when what you really don't want is the drama you're creating around losing weight. And if we were to remove the drama, the beating yourself up when you mess up, the making things mean shit that it doesn't mean, just like when you don't reflect at night, if you had to guess before I gave you the easy answer, which is it might just be bad timing, when you don't reflect at night, what do you think is the deep down shitty little thought you have about yourself about that? It means what?
Like the so if I in the past when I haven't done and I realize the next day like, oh, you didn't do the things yesterday, it feels like all the it feels like all the things I've tried before. So many diets, so many that, started, maybe had some success, and I quit and failed and gained it back and then some.
And that's the part we really want to understand is that it's not that you don't want to lose the weight. I don't want to feel like a failure. And also, I don't want to feel the fear. I don't want to feel the uncertainty, like, can I do this? Is this possible? It's really, really important that you see. That's all you're avoiding. You're avoiding what you make it mean when you make mistakes. And if we fix that piece, if we go from thinking, when I don't do my nightly reflection, to not mean I'm failing and I'm now triggered, not when I'm a failure, I now trigger all the fear that I'll never have what I want. If we can fix that little piece on the inside, then when you miss a night, you can look at it differently. You can look at it like, yeah, I'm just not used to doing it. Sometimes I'm going to forget. It's going to probably take a few weeks before I remember. Oh, I've tried to do it at night for a whole week. I never seem to want to. Maybe that's the worst time for me to try. Maybe I should do it earlier in the evening. Even if I, and if I eat later on, I'll reflect on that tomorrow in tomorrow's reflection. Like, I'll make this work. But that's what I need you to see is that, to get you to where you can keep going, I think in your mind, keeping going means keeping going the right way. And I'm saying keeping going means we're going to keep going and it be messy. And we're not going to make it being messy mean that you're failing. We're going to make being messy mean there's good reasons why it's messy. And when I untangle the reasons why it's messy, it's a lot easier to lose weight. And one of your big reasons is what you just said. I think it's the most important reason of all is I keep telling myself I'm failing when it's just normal to have to figure out what the new groove is going to be. And it's just normal to figure out what parts are hard and why they're hard and get a coach to help me with it. And we just keep going. I promise you, if you can be very aware of what you think about yourself when you make mistakes and learn how to be there for yourself compassionately, like let the version of you who's upset and afraid and throwing like, oh my God, we're failing. And it's just like every diet. And, what if we never do this and stuff? Let her have her say. And then take a few deep breaths. And then you come in and you say, I think this is the way it's supposed to happen. I don't think we're actually failing. I think that there's pieces to this puzzle I'm still figuring out. Just like today. I mean, you didn't know that there can just be terrible times to pick for ourselves to do things. I was going to get into the habit of laying in my sauna blanket. I have the sauna blanket, and it's supposed to be really good for you, and it's supposed to like help you meditate, like a thousand good reasons why to do it, right? And I was picking like right after lunch to do it. And so I did it a few days and I hated it. And then I didn't do it for like 2 weeks. And I'm looking at it, it's on my mama's bed. And every day I'm walking by it thinking, yeah, I should probably do that sauna blanket. And so one morning I just decided I need to figure out why I gave that up. And so I just lit rather than just saying, like, yeah, you're never going to be a meditator. And you always say you're going to do these things and you just keep on working. You don't do shit for yourself. Like, I was like, there's got to be a reason why this is happening. And so, like, I did a reflection on it. And lo and behold, the only thing that came out of it was when I would lay in it after lunch, I got so sleepy that I couldn't focus the rest of the day. It was not recharging me, it was actually draining me. And work is so important to me. And if something gets in the way of my work, I will move heaven and earth and sacrifice even myself. And I had to draw that out. So I was like, all right. Putting it in the middle of my workday, which everybody said was going to help me, was not the right thing for Corinne. So I moved it to the afternoon so that when work was done, in fact, I lay in that motherfucker typing like this just to get my sauna time in. And I do my mindless work during that time. And then when I'm done, I'm like, all right, it's like 5 o'clock. I don't do shit after five, and everybody knows it. And that sauna blanket has done its job. But if, can you imagine if I just made it seem like I must not be able to keep streaks going. I always say I'm going to do things and I never do them. If, I mean, it would be just as easy for me to beat myself up over stuff like that. And I do understand though that like losing weight is way more deeper. I remember the days that you're in right now, but I promise if you can work through this stuff with your weight loss, there will be nothing in your life that won't like rock you anymore. Because to me, weight loss is the most personal shit. All right, make sure you come to the workshop. Are you going to come to the workshop?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good. Because I think it'll really help. There's a lot that I'm going to explain that kind of goes a little bit deeper into what we talked about. I think there's like the first two videos in and of themselves, I think will help you because the second one is about tracking and it's all about how streaks don't actually help you. They hinder us most of the time. And it also talks about the only thing standing between us and getting our goals is usually the judgment piece that we have. If you can't make mistakes in weight loss, you're not going to be able to lose weight. It's just, I will die on that hill. And you just deserve to have your own back more, but you have to teach yourself how to do it because, you know, up until this point, you've had no reason to. You've declared yourself a perfectionist. Why would you have your own back? Perfectionists are like, no, the way you have your back is do it right. So now we're giving you a reason. What are you thinking before I let you go?
Oh, I'm feeling more optimistic.
Okay.
I think I like that idea of like, and we're just trying to try to like make the interval shorter between like a mess up and trying again and yeah, like really working on my mindset about so what? I skipped a day or two. That doesn't mean I can't just try it again and not feel so bad about it.
Yeah. Just all of you, please, when you're thinking about it, like if you miss a couple of days, it's not because something's wrong with you, like inherently. Like, you're not a failure. It's not because you can't lose weight. It's not those things. It's not because you're not disciplined. It's not because you're lacking willpower. Whatever it is that y'all like, some people say they're lazy. Some people like say all kinds of things. It's literally because in those 2 days, I guarantee you, the quality of conversation in your head around your life or missing somehow was stopping you from continuing. And you want to fix that piece. So if you asked me in the very beginning, like you don't want to wait until January 4th. What you would like to do is figure out what you can do between now and then. I think the best thing that you could do is get your planner back out. Figure out when you actually want to do your reflection, and then just do it. See what happens. And if you don't do it the way you think it's supposed to happen, challenge yourself to just listen to the story you're telling yourself about it. Get so in tune with it. Because y'all won't believe how often we don't have to change a lot of things. The second we start listening for the conversation, and like it was just like when you said, well, now when I say it out loud, like you had like a different perspective. It was like when I say what I do out loud, I'm like, okay, like now I can kind of see that's not great, or that's silly, or that makes no sense. When we're not listening, every nonsensical thing that we're doing in our head makes sense because it's not challenged, it's not looked at. And when you just get good at listening to yourself, you'll start becoming a really good weeder of like, okay, that makes no sense. Just because I missed my reflection means that I should just throw it all away. Because your brain will say, like, well, you didn't reflect, you might as well just stop. And if you actually hear that, you're like, well, why? Why should we just stop? It lets you ask good questions of yourself. It lets you say, like, well, why do we need to stop? Your brain will be like, because you're a failure. And then you can be like, oh, that's why I'm stopping. And I need to remind myself, I'm not failing. I can just reflect now. I can just move on with the day. I can just remind myself there's information to be had here if I look for it. Like, there's a thousand other ways to look at it. Maybe I pick one of those. Okay. That's what I want you to do between now and then. I guarantee you it'll help. Guarantee. All right.
I think
Thank
it
you.
will. Thank you, Corinne.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There we go. All right. Salma? Yeah, sometimes Christy Larson said something good in the comments. Talk to yourself out loud. You know, some people, I do this. I have my own little personal journal inside of ChatGPT now. I do some stuff handwriting, like when I'm ideating or when I'm doing certain things, I do like written. But when I want to talk to myself, I have a little chat that I use in ChatGPT, and I have an app called Whisper. Now, not everybody run out and get it, but it's W, how do they spell it? I think it's WHSPR. It's like missing like the I and the E. I think they took all of the vowels out of it. But what it is, it's an app you put on if you have Apple products. I know it works on Apple. I'm not sure about the other ones. And you use the little key on your keyboard that looks like the world. It's like a little world down in the left-hand corner. And when you hold it, no matter what app you're using, it will record what you say and type it out like in sentence form. Like it'll even bullet things. I use it a lot in work, but I use it in my personal journaling. So, like, I will take some questions that I want to ask myself and I will talk to ChatGPT to it. So, I will use the Whisper app so that what I'm thinking isn't censored because when we type and when we write, there's good for both sides. So, like when you write, That's really good because your brain is really trying to synthesize things. That's why they say when you take notes, don't type. You actually want to write because your brain is going to make you capture notes in a way that that it makes sense to you versus notes of just exactly what someone said. When you journal, writing is good because it kind of slows your brain down enough to get exactly what you want out. So you typically are going to parcel through your thoughts. I have found that you can also use the opposite of that as very powerful by just talking. You get it all out, like it's just that running commentary that's coming out of you. And you see a lot of what you're actually thinking and believing because a lot of times, if you'll watch these calls, people start pretty censored. They're trying to tell me what they think I want to hear, or they're trying to tell me in the best way possible. And then as I get to asking questions and we get going, they just say shit and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe I just said that. Like, because that is the real stuff that's going on inside of us. So that's why sometimes I like to use the talking. All right, Sama, it's all you now. What you need help with?
Hi, Corinne. How are
Hey,
you?
good.
I just want to say first, I've been listening to you this whole year on the free podcast, and I am a fan of your podcast, and I'm so happy that I'm finally part of the tribe. And just to say quickly that I've been trying to lose weight for so many years, and when I heard your podcast, it just made so much sense that no calories, no over like complicating or making it very scientific and just listening to your body. So I really connected with that. So I have I don't know where to start because I have a lot of things I want to be coached on. So I'll just give you a couple of things that are floating around and maybe you can like help guide me on what I need to work on. So I'm type 1 diabetic. And I have this physical aspect that comes with the emotional one. So in terms of the physical, I struggle a little bit when my blood sugar goes high or low. When it goes high, I get anxious that it's high. So that's the emotional thing that comes with it, because I'm thinking I need to make it go down now, because if it keeps being high, I'll be tired and it might like affect my body some way. So I panic a little and I take too much insulin and then it goes really low. And then when it goes low, I'm like, okay, well, my chance to eat something sweet. And then I eat chocolate and stuff. And it's not I should just eat ju like drink juice or take tablets or the right things. So that's one physical thing that I'm dealing with. I'm also dealing with some anxiety about yesterday, for example, I was reading about some things online, and of course it had like complications and it had diabetes as the factor, and so I also get anxious a lot about that, even though like everything is fine right now, but when I get anxious about that, I emotionally eat. And I know all the logical things I should be doing and the pauses, but when I'm in that very emotional state, it's like I don't know how to pause. I don't know how to pause. So that's like one whole thing. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about is also I lost about 3 pounds since the loose 10 when I joined, and that's good, but I just wanted faster weight loss because I'm afraid if I don't do it fast enough I'll lose motivation. So that's one thing I'm also worried about. So
Well, the good news is motivation can't be lost. Motivation in and of itself, it's a funny thing because people always think they're going to just loot, like, oh my God, where'd my motivation go? Motivation is one of those emotions that is, number one, supposed to go down. We're supposed to lose the motivation. So it's just like somebody saying, don't understand why I'm not happy all the time. Like, you're not supposed to be happy all the time. You were given sadness, you were given anxiety, you were given all the emotions for very good reasons. We were given shame for a good reason. It's like if you didn't have shame, you would just somebody'd walk, like I was at church and this guy literally walked by, and then I can't even believe I'm admitting this out loud, but I'm just gonna say it. This guy walks by, swear to God, I don't think he combed his hair. Hair, mess. And I like sitting there in church and I'm looking at this guy going like, oh my God, He should really comb his hair. You know, like that was the first thought I had. So our brains are very nonsensical, number one, no matter how good you're trying to be. And even when you're in the Lord's house, your brain still acts cruel. But if I didn't have shame, I probably would have blurted out, "Hey, you should comb your hair to come to church." So, but because I have shame built in, I know not to do those things. All right. So, when it comes to motivation, we are not supposed to be motivated all the time. We are supposed to get to the part pretty quickly in weight loss where we don't want to rely on motivation anymore. We want motivation to get us started. But motivation is the worst emotion to want to hang on to because motivation is generated from action usually. It's very rare that you just, like, I just even want you to think, in order to join, you had to listen to the podcast. You were taking action, you got motivated to join. When you join, you took action, that got you motivated to try to do things. Motivation follows action. And so when we are like worried we're going to lose it, we're worrying about the wrong thing. We need to be thinking about, all right, how do I keep taking actions that are so simple that every time I'm doing something, I can set myself up to be motivated to take another one? So we don't want to worry about, I just wanted to explain that one to you so we don't even have to coach on it. Because one of your worries is that you're going to lose motivation. You need to tell your brain, I'm not supposed to be motivated all the time. I'm supposed to understand why I'm going to do these things. I'm supposed to get to the part pretty quickly where I need to understand why some things feel harder than they should. I need to get to the part where I'm not doing things so I can understand what are my deeper fears, what are my inner anxieties, what are those things that are going on? Because that's what I got to work on. Because if you're just motivated all the time, you're just going to keep trying to do things and you're going to ignore your entire emotional life. And since you can't stay motivated all the time and you're waiting for motivation, that means we're not looking at our emotional life. Make sure our emotional life is what dictates whether or not we're going to lose weight or not. Okay. So with that out of the way, let's just talk about anxiety because you mentioned it three times. Okay. So anxiety must be what we call a go-to emotion for you. Like it's one that your brain has really gotten into the habit of using to get you to do things. And there's other emotions that are like we want anxiety sometimes, but we don't want it all the time. And we don't want anxiety to walk into the door when it's just not needed to get us to do something. Like when you first were probably diagnosed as a type one, or there might be times in your life where anxiety actually, when your blood sugar gets too high, you might need it. Let's say you're really busy and you're not noticing that your blood sugar is like sky high. Your body will probably start generating anxiety to remind you to take care of this. So sometimes when it comes to anxiety, what can happen you can do is you can make friends with it first to just understand that it's playing an important role in your life. It's right now, it's what you use to make sure you take care of your blood sugar when it gets too high. And
I
then a
never
week
thought of it like that.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what helps because a lot of times what we do is we label our feelings like a jerk, like anxiety. You're bad, you know, like get out. You shouldn't be here. Something must be wrong with me because I haven't. You know, like we do all that. It's like our last person. We create a lot of drama around it instead of anxiety is a feeling. And over time, I have gotten really used to, in order for me to take care of my blood sugar, I have to get anxious first and then I take care of it. And what we want to do is like, okay, that's become a habit. And that has become something I'm using. And now what I want to do is question, do I want to keep that as a part of my process? Or do I want to start working on a new way to be thinking about my blood sugar? And when it goes up, like it's time to examine, what do I make that mean? Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm not an expert in type 1 diabetes. My sister-in-law is one, but I mean, I don't know enough about it. So I am telling you nothing that you can apply in health. Okay. So please don't like, you know.
I'm talking about the emotional part, and I understand
Yeah.
like you wouldn't give tips about the actual medical thing, but
Yes.
the an anxiety makes me drives me to take the wrong medical decisions. That's why I want to work on the anxiety, because if I take a pause and think, then I can give the correct things I need to. I can give the right dose, I with like logical thinking, and that's what I
Yeah.
want to do.
So right now, the problem is your blood sugar gets too high, anxiety comes in, and there's no way to use logic. Or do you sometimes you're able to use your logical brain?
Sometimes I do, and I did like a protocol where like look at this when the blood sugar goes high, look at this and just do it. And when I did it, first thing I put in it was don't blame yourself for it going high, because that's usually the emotional part that makes me a little anxious, because sometimes it will go high without you, even if you tried to do everything right, and then just do 1, 2, 3 and follow that. And I used that a couple of times and it worked, but it didn't work all the time. Like it's still, maybe I'm like
Are you still
being too
trying to use
perfectionist about.
well, that's what I'm wondering. So your 1-2-3 method, it's worked sometimes, just didn't work every time. Did you give up on it, or did you keep trying the 1-2-3, even though sometimes you're not doing it?
I think I gave up on it the first time it didn't work. I think that's what
Okay.
happened.
So that's the first really key piece we need to learn here. And this is exactly what we were talking about the last time. Is you put in a new system to handle when your blood sugar got too high. And your brain, though, is very used to not a logical system. Your brain is just like, bleh! That's what your brain is like. Why are we not panicking? Why are we not blaming ourselves? Why are we not having a fucking fit? Like, it's just like, no.
So
And
true.
so it's, yeah. And so when it doesn't, like if you say it works twice on the third time, it's not that that's not going to work anymore. I want you to think about this isn't because I'm bad at this or this won't work. It's because it's new to me. And when something's new, it takes a while before it becomes the habit. It takes a lot of trial and error before it becomes the new way of being. So I always use this example, and I beat it to death, but we're going to listen to it one more time for the lady in the back who ain't heard it. So I'm right-handed. I always say I don't know why God even gave me a left hand because I couldn't even scratch my ass good if I had to. If you were to smash this hand today, and it got casted, and there was no way I could use it tomorrow, if I needed to write something down. What do you think my brain would do?
It would try to use the right hand
It would
anyway.
like automatically be like trying to grab that pen. And even if it hurt when I went for it would probably try to grab that pen for a few weeks. And then, but over a few weeks, because I would have to keep saying, like, fuck me, I gotta write with my left hand. You know, I'd have to keep doing it until I repeated going right. And then going left over and over and over again, eventually my brain would stop asking my right hand to do anything because it would notice I don't need that behavior anymore. So it would just turn that down. Anxiety is the same. We can actually build neural pathways that when your blood sugar goes too high, if you've been reacting with anxiety, and you had a shiny new plan, and like the third time, it's just like, nope, anxiety. Don't think about that. Don't use that. Like, let's do all this. If after you do that, if you remind yourself, oh, wait, I'm becoming someone who uses my 1-2-3 plan. Like every single time you were determined to tell yourself, all right, I didn't do it this time, but I am going to get good at this. I'm going to train my brain how to reach for 1, 2, 3 and not reach for anxiety. If you did that every single time and you made that conscious effort, eventually your brain can bypass anxiety. But when you have an emotional habit as a, like when an emotion becomes a habit, go to, logic often gets thrown out the window, especially with anxiety, because it doesn't think logic is safe, especially in your situation. You're like having a medical event. And so your brain is very used to treating it in one way, emergency. And so it makes sense why it keeps trying to go back to it. And that means that you just have to keep working with it. Now, the other thing that's very different for you when it comes to just pure anxiety is before you can do 1, 2, 3, you may need some grounding techniques. So, like with anxiety, there's different things that, like different emotions. Let me see if I can find this. I actually looked at it the other day. Hang on. I save things all the time everywhere. And this is going into a program, and now I got to find it on my phone. Under, I think it's under nervous system. No, I don't have it. It's not in here. All right, I don't want to spend all of our time looking for my one thing I wanted to tell you. But essentially, like if you are experiencing anxiety, there are certain grounding techniques that work really good for anxiety, but that like won't work for apathy or for depression or for sadness. So like sometimes, like if you're needing to be, like if you're anxious, moving around your body, there's this one called Qigong or something like that, where you bend over and you beat your back like this. Doing some things like that can disrupt some of those emotions and take them down a notch so that you can then get to your 1, 2, 3 method. But it's gonna, again, you need to visualize you having a blood sugar spike, you getting anxious, and you calming yourself down first. You need to visualize you reasoning with yourself, like, I am safe. I've got at least, I mean, you tell me. When your blood sugar spikes, how many minutes do you have before it becomes like a medical event, a true medical event where you need like?
High blood sugar isn't really an emergency in terms of diabetes. Like it's fine. It just long like on the long term over years, if you're constantly going high, that's when it has side effects. But the true emergency is the low blood sugar, where it needs to be treated very quickly. But high, for me, I treat it as an emergency because I feel like the more time it spends up there, the more risk of me getting complications later on in life. Like I blow it up into a big thing.
So that's where I think that we can work on is because that is true. Okay. Your brain is literally just spitting out, like it's saying, here's the facts. Like, if this happens enough, you could have long-term problems. But it's taking it and it's like blowing it way out of proportion.
It is.
And it's like, if we can get to where, if we know that you could tell yourself, like, I'm gonna put my hand over my heart, I'm gonna take deep breaths, I'm gonna remind myself, I feel like this is an emergency, but it's not an emergency. And like doing some deep breathing before you actually start doing the medical intervention, that, like, even on that in and of itself helps you have a new reaction to anxiety in general in your life. Because I guarantee if you're getting anxious about this, anybody who says, I get anxious about this means they've got 40 other things they get anxious about real easy. It's like,
is so true.
yeah.
100%.
And so you could use all of your blood sugar spikes as a way to befriend your anxiety, to help it. Like, if what do you think you could tell yourself about your anxiety that would help you go from like a level 10 to like a, because about the time you get to about a 5 of anxiety, you can logic yourself then. But we got to get like kind of on the 5 and below. You don't have to not be anxious at all. You just can't be in sheer panic. I feel like that's what you're describing is more of like, this is not just like, ooh, my blood sugar's up. It's like, oh my God.
I think if I just tell myself that and anxiety every time in the past, it didn't help. It actually caused the exact opposite. And I just remember that and visualize it. I think that will help me tap into my logical side and see that it's not going to be helpful anyway, that I need another thing.
What is the anxiety helping you with that you could say to yourself?
It's helping me to take action right now, and it's helping me to take it seriously and not like yeah,
I
take my
think
health
that's what
seriously.
you, I love that. I almost think that's better than saying it's not helping. I always find that all of my feelings, that when I talk to them, as a way that I can understand you're just trying to help, I calm down a lot and the emotion calms down. It makes it safe for the emotion to present itself and it doesn't have to like come in like, you know, like a bat out of hell. So it's like reminding yourself, like, I know you're trying to help. You just want me to take this seriously. And you can say, like, take a few deep breaths. They're like, I take this very seriously. In fact, I take it so seriously. Sometimes I even worry about my long-term health. That's how serious I take it. And that's why my 1-2-3 method is, I think, me taking it seriously, like really talking to anxiety about, like, I understand why you're here. And I appreciate you just want me to help myself. You just don't know any other way. You've gotten very conditioned to, if I present this way, I take action. And I want to show you I'm going to take action. And I think we can do it in a gentler way, in a much easier way.
I love that. I haven't thought of that. I usually my go-to is like, you're not needed. You're already been there countless times before. Like, we need to do it differently, but it's such a mindset shift to look at it like it serves a purpose and it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Never
thank you for
forget that
that.
every emotion serves purposes. They're always, I always feel like I always think about my mom. I swear to God, I love my mother. You almost think like we have the worst relationship, but my mother can straight dope say stuff that you're just like, wow. Like, I can't believe you said that. Like, just, you know, shocking, right? And I always remind myself, like, my mom never says that shit because she's trying to be spiteful or she's trying to be a downer or she's trying to be anything. She literally has good intentions. Always. I know she's always coming from like some kind of place on deep on the inside. She thinks this behavior or this way is just needed. And it's the only way she knows. And that makes me like not overreact and not get pissy and not, you know, get triggered and all kinds of stuff because I've really taught myself over the year, and this took years, but over the years of like, my mom is always doing her best. She really is. Her best just doesn't sound exactly the way I wish it would all the time. But that's okay. As long as I know she's got good intentions, that's all I need to know. I don't have to hear it a certain way in order to feel that way. And I think that what we can do, that same with your anxiety around your blood sugar spikes, is, you know, you don't have to, I don't need you, anxiety, to communicate a certain way. I just need to understand why you're here. And I just need to talk to you in a way of where, like, I get you and I am taking this seriously, and here's how. And I always tell my feelings too. They can come anytime they want. They don't come near as often when I do that. When I'm like acting like they shouldn't be here, they're like coming at me like, devils from everywhere, you know. But when I say like, oh, worry and anxiety, you can come whenever you want. For some reason, I just calm the fuck down. I'm like, well, okay. Let's talk about the low, because the low is the dangerous part, but it's the one where you're, I wrote down, you get giddy that you can eat chocolate.
A part of me is like, okay, we're allowed to have something sweet now because I was diagnosed when I was 15 years old. So when that happened, my mom, out of like caring for me, she's like tried to, not get me to not eat anything sugary, take out all the stuff that can spike my blood sugar. So whenever I would go low, she'd be like, okay, you can have something sweet now. So it's like now in my brain, whenever I go low, I'm allowed to have something sweet. So, and it's not the right thing to have. I should have something very fast absorb, like glucose tablets, like juice, not like chocolate or something that will take time to digest. And I should allow myself to take it at other times when it's not low and I can dose for it correctly. But what ends up happening is I only allow myself when it's low. And
So I just need to know technically, are you allowed to have chocolate?
Yes, as a type 1 diabetic, I am allowed to have it in moderation, without binging on it, and if I
Okay.
w and dosing for it correctly.
And are you actively planning it outside of low sugar moments?
I'm not because
Why?
because I want to lose weight fast, and I feel like it's not gonna help me. And I try to, the thing about motivation that you said that you told me about earlier, that's part of it because I want to lose weight faster. I feel like it's an illegal food, even though you say it's not, but I feel
It's
like it is
not.
for
Hey,
some
I
reason.
would like, I just want to say, I think it's going to be really hard for you to lose weight if every time your blood sugar crashes, you binge on chocolate. If you're doing it like naughtily, I just want you to see the pattern you're creating for yourself. It's like, oh, chocolate's bad in terms of my weight loss. So the habit I want to create is to have it in such a way that it harms me and have it in such a way that it actually does slow down my weight loss. Because if I have a terrible relationship with food, it's really hard to lose weight and keep it off because I'm building the habit of a terrible relationship with food instead of building the habit of like, ooh, good Lord, maybe I want to have a better relationship with food, which I just want to tell you answer me this. If you spent the next 3 months, every time you had a low sugar dip, you didn't have the chocolate, you did like your protocol. But over the next 3 months, we just planned for you to have some chocolate. Like, I don't know, every couple days, like a little bit here and there where you can get a little pleasure, you can actually enjoy it. Because I don't think the problem is chocolate. If you binge chocolate, that's a problem. But it ain't the chocolate, it's the binging. You could binge chicken and still gain weight.
That's yeah, I'm my mind is like so used to this habit. And I know logically it doesn't make sense at all. Like you just said, I can just plan for it and it would be better. But you really helped
But
me
do you?
with the
But do
I
you believe that if you plan for it, why would it be better?
because then I get to enjoy it and without panicking eating it, and I get to take my time and I get to have more stable blood sugars overall, because when I binge chocolate, it just goes up again and it becomes a loop. But if I eat chocolate in the proper time when it's not low and dose for it, overall my blood sugar is more stable.
And it is a lot easier to lose weight when your blood sugar is stable. It's almost impossible for your body to drop fat when your blood sugar is just like, not only do you feel like ass, but we're just talking in pure terms of losing weight. You know, blood sugar is an important component of that. And the more you actively can stabilize it, which would mean having chocolate regularly in doses that make sense for you, instead of having it irregularly in doses that make no sense for you.
That's
Because
so
you're trying to
true.
lose weight doing it that way.
And I want to say, like, the first 2 weeks in the Lose 10 group, when I started doing doable hunger and I was actually doing it, my blood sugar became very stable and much better. I wanted to tell you this actually. It helped my blood sugar, like it helped me medically when I was eating just still enough. And I think I was very good the first 2 weeks, very, very good. And then my perfectionist brain, when I started slipping and like binging and like all that, and the blood sugar going up and down, I just slipped a lot. So if I can go back to doing just doable hunger and planning for chocolate, I think that would help me both weight loss and diabetes wise.
Definitely. But here's the caveat you got to put in there. You're going to go back to doable hunger. And this time, instead of calling it slipping and messing up and whatnot, we have to say, like, and that's the vital information I need. Because if you're not, like, basically, if you're not waiting for hunger and you're not stopping at enough, there's always a good reason why. And until we solve those reasons, you can't just make yourself do doable hunger if it's serving a purpose, just like your anxiety is serving a purpose. And we can't just get rid of anxiety because right now, if we got rid of your anxiety, you might not actually control your sugar. So if we're talking about, like, I always say this, and I don't know if you've heard it in the public podcast, but I say this a lot on the inside. Whenever somebody is like about, I would say 70% of our eating is emotional. So if we are eating past enough or not waiting for hunger, 70% of the time it lies in emotion. The other 30%, sometimes it's just mindless eating. Like, that's why I have a lot of times when we first get started with people, I'm like, let's cut the obvious shit out. Let's cut the stuff that's the easiest to cut out. Let's get aware of when we're just popping food in our mouth and we're not married to it. So it's easy to like get rid of it. It's like a jackass boyfriend, easy to dump, you know? So we look for those things first. The second ones are just habits. I am in the habit of eating a snack every afternoon, and I've been doing it for the last 20 years of my life, and I never even considered the idea that I might not need it. So we're gonna break habits. Those are a little harder than, like, so with mindless eating, it's all about getting awareness first. Once you're very aware of you're doing it, letting it go becomes easy. It's no different than I broke my right hand. I've got to use my left. And mindless eating is the sometimes I'm going to grab things for no reason other than I'm used to it. So I just got to keep reminding myself, oh yeah, I don't do that anymore. Oh yeah, let me move this food around. Let me put it in different places so that I have to be really aware of what I'm doing. Habit is a little harder to stop, but not as much. Habit is where I'm just so used to doing it that when I stop doing it, it's like if I told you brush your teeth every day. All right. If I told you, girl, me and you, we're going to be on the stanky breath train for like a whole week, we're not brushing our teeth. You
Would be
could
so
do
hard.
it, but you wouldn't want to. Like, you have all these reasons why you do it. And you have, like, oh no, like, everybody's going to think I stink and whatnot. But we could, because we're not like married to it. We could see the end of the tunnel, those kind of, that's why I like sometimes breaking habits are just a matter of like, okay, I just have to get over the habitualness of this. I know I do it, but my brain's not going to want to quit doing it just because I have a good reason not to. Like, if we were going to get, $1 million for not brushing our teeth for a week, we'd still want to brush our teeth, but we would be highly motivated not to do it. Okay. The rest of it is emotional. The rest of it is always, if I'm eating past enough, it's because I'm sitting here and it's serving a purpose. It has a like there's a coping skill involved. Like if I eat past enough at dinner because my days are hard. And the only time I ever like can check out during the day is when I eat dinner. Now that is a coping mechanism. That is how I give myself a break. That is how I unwind. That is the only way I know how to do something for myself without feeling guilty or selfish or lazy or, whatever's happening. Those are the harder ones to break because we have to really understand our emotional reasons, and you can't just take the food away. And that's what, when I ask y'all to honor hunger and enough, I'm saying I am on purpose taking your coping mechanism away so that you're going to get to a point to where you want to do it again. And then our job is to figure out why you want to so we can solve that. The only way to get there is to see mistakes. Like what you call a mistake right now, and I always like to call it a mistake. It's like, an eating mistake. Say I blew past enough. The only way we get to really solving this is we have to see the mistakes and say, all right, I no longer treat this as a mistake. I treat this as a lesson. What is going on here? Because if I know I want to lose weight, I know the rules, I know what I'm supposed to be doing. But if I'm not able to follow through on that, there's always a really good reason why. So Corinne's probably taken away some coping mechanism that I didn't know until Corinne that I even had. And when I find it and I fix it, stopping it enough, it's not even hardly hard anymore. We go back to now, it's just a habit to stop. It's just easy. I don't need it anymore. So I think that's what I need you to add in. It's like if you're going to go back to hunger and enough and doing it, I want you to say, like, all right. And then every time I don't do it, I've got to learn that this is information. This is not a problem.
Yes. Thank you, Corinne, so much. You have no idea how much this session really, really helped me. Thank you. And for your mission to help women lose weight and deal with this emotional problems and coping mechanisms. Really, really thank you.
You're welcome.
This
How
was so
old are you,
helpful.
by the
Thank
way?
you.
Are you one of my youngins?
Sorry.
Are you one of my youngins? You gotta be like 30, maybe 25. Like, I'm just
am
trying to guess. Are
30.
you in the 20s or 30s?
I am 3-0-30.
Well, look at me. It's just like I'm a fortune teller or something. Well, good. I love it when we have the young ladies. A lot of us are the older generation, but I always say, and I want you to take this to heart, there are hundreds of us in this group right now who wish we were doing this at your age. Be very proud of yourself because, I mean, God love us, all of us and Gen Xers and beyond. If we just wish we were as smart as you to do this, okay?
Thank you so much. Thank
You're
you.
welcome. All righty. Bye bye. All right, Mara, you're the last one today. Oh, we've got a couple of Q&A. Good, Karen. I'm glad all that was helpful. Hey, Mara.
Hey, Corinne, how are
How
you?
are you?
I'm okay. listened to your 365 yesterday, and I just really need to talk.
Okay. Now you'll have to tell me what that was. I recorded those in November.
It was, I gotta bring it up because I don't remember it.
Or just the topic, the general.
It was, the feeling the feels.
All right,
And
sort of what we've been talking about today a lot.
right.
Okay.
So, I've had a little misfortune this past 2 or 3 months. I think, my husband had 4 heart attacks and was basically on his deathbed and then started to come out of the woods. And then I found out that he had been cheating on me for 1.5 years.
Okay.
And, I've come so far in this program. I've been here a while. And I'm having a problem with vacillating between bashing myself and taking, I think this is what I mean, guilt for what happened, but yet I go between that and feeling a victim. You know what I do you understand?
I do. I
Okay.
do.
I just want to make sure because it's still very confusing for me. I've been trying to do some journaling on it and what I'm feeling, but it's staggering my weight loss. And it's not like I'm binging. It's those times when I would say this is the way I want to explain it, is that lightning bolts hit, and that's when I eat. And I
Yeah.
don't eat a lot, but it's enough just to slow the train down because
Yeah.
I've done a lot of work on emotions. I hear you all the time in my head.
Yeah.
Walk away, Mara. But I guess feeling not knowing how to feel right now because, yes, my husband's doing better. He's gonna come out of it and everything. But yet I have this big elephant in the room that nobody knows about,
Yeah.
except three of my best friends.
And
And
all of us now.
all of you. But that's okay. That's okay.
We're like a big group of besties.
Yeah. So I guess I don't know what I need. I just maybe I'm ashamed of how I'm feeling. Maybe it's I'm ashamed that this infidelity happened. I don't quite know. I've just been in this circle of trying to walk the walk and not.
Well, I think the first place that we can start is it's hard to feel your feelings when you don't even know which feelings you're feeling yet. So I think maybe what we do is we kind of explore what feelings you're having and which ones you want to keep, even if they're negative, which ones you don't want to keep. And we look at them and come up with like a different way to think about it to maybe allow that feeling to go away, or at least allow that moment of when that feeling arrives, you have something to say. Because I wrote down two feelings that you said guilt and you said ashamed. And they're
And I'm
probably
also
coming from
mad too, I
and
suppose.
mad. Okay. Yeah. Which. I'm going to give you my opinion.
Give
Okay.
me
This is
your
my coach.
opinion. That's what I love you for.
Okay. I'm going to give you my opinion. And then I want you to tell me either my opinion will land or my opinion won't. And we'll go from there. My first opinion is you have nothing to be ashamed about. And if you do feel shame, we need to figure out why. Because very often we use in situations where someone's hurt us, I'm going to assume your husband has hurt you by cheating on you. Is that a reasonable assumption? Okay. All right. When we have been hurt by somebody, our brain panics and it is desperate for an explanation. Even if the explanation makes us wrong. It's just trying to close the loop of why did this happen? And if we're not careful, which I'm not saying you're not being careful, but this is just how it usually happens, our brain will create stories that do not help us. Now, it's doing it because it really wants to know why did this happen? Why did this happen? Why did this happen? And it's latching onto something like, and when it says ashamed, it's like trying to take responsibility for it. Because if I take responsibility for it, then your brain makes an unreasonable like assumption, then I can handle it. There's something I can do. Because you're in a situation you probably don't feel that you have a lot of control over. And what we do have control over is Mara. We get to control how you want to interpret this story, how much blame you want and don't want. I'm not saying you should take any blame at all. All right. I'm just saying that that's like an option. You have control over how you treat yourself. I'm going to tell you right now, eating is one way to treat yourself, and it's not a bad way. And you are riddled with, you probably have guilt because you said it. You have shame. You're angry. You're probably also worried. He's had four heart attacks. You probably got a thousand things going on. And your brain is just literally like using food to regulate you right now. Okay. So I wouldn't feel bad that you're eating. What I would do is I would appreciate that what your brain is saying is, I need help. I don't yet know how to get it. Food is working right now. And if you give me another option, I bet you your brain is willing to take it. But when it doesn't see another option, it always goes back to what will work. And I'm just going to tell y'all, food works. If Chris died right now, I am pretty sure I'd be face down in some food for about a month until I could get my bearings. Or unless Jane came and slapped donuts right out my face. Like Jane would have to come live with me and she'd be cooking for me and saying, like, we're not eating through it. I'm going to coach you every night. We would just be doing it. But you don't, like, you right now have Mara. You know, if I didn't have Jane or somebody slapping food out of my mouth, I'd probably eat too. And that's just real and honest until I could get my bearings about me again. Okay. And it sounds like you're coming out of the phase where it's like, all right, I notice I'm eating over this now. I'm coming into the phase of
The
I
shock
don't
or
want to
not.
be, yeah, like I don't want to be eating over it anymore, but I've got all these emotions and I need a, I got to figure out how to handle them because right now food is handling them for me. So we can't just take away food and like leave you just butt naked over here with all these emotions and nothing to do with them. So let's just take them one at a time and I'll give you my opinion. Me. I'm gonna tell you right now, I don't think mad's a bad one. If Chris cheated on me, I'd be Yosemite Sam shooting little guns all day long, just firing it up. And I'd be pissed. I don't think that's a misplaced emotion. And sometimes if we want the emotion, it's like, you know, I wanna be mad about this right now. This was unfair. This was not right. Like, this is not what we agreed to when we got married. When we say we want to be mad about something, we typically don't need to eat over it anymore. We allow ourselves to have our feelings. Ashamed, we need to figure out why you're ashamed. What are you ashamed about?
So I think, when I found out about the infidelity, I had taken lots of screenshots of it, and I was pissed, and I probably. I'm not going to say I'm mad at myself for doing it. I was mad because we've been married for 30 years, and why now? And I printed all the pictures and I threw it at him, and I said, "What gives?" Because this is ridiculous. But then, not really good at talking about the three-letter word, but I'm gonna talk about it.
Okay.
That there was a time in my weight loss that I had a lot of body dysmorphia, and I really didn't like my body. Plus, I had the skin surgery, so a lot of places don't have those same feelings, and I just kind of closed the door, but I didn't think it not mattered, but I didn't think it was a problem until he had mentioned it once before, and I'm like, well, I'm not ready, blah blah blah. And then I didn't hear anything until so he was intubated and he needed to get into his phone, and he was trying to tell me the code. Well, the code was for Telegram, and up popped her face and all of the things while his mother was sitting 5 feet from us, not even 5 feet. And
But what are you
I,
ashamed of?
because I guess it all goes back to not liking my body, not loving myself enough earlier on in my life, that I've always had a negative connotation about my body.
Yeah.
And
But what are
it's
you
been really
ashamed
hard.
of? But why are you ashamed of that? You've told me a lot of things that you haven't done, but you haven't told me why that's shameful.
Because I feel like I should be doing these things, like I should want to do these things. And,
Like have
I,
sex, you mean?
yeah, and, other things, foreplay, whatever you want to talk about. But
Yeah, but let me just say this. I don't think you should want those things. I just want you to, this is not for him, this is for you. When you have body dysmorphia and you don't like your body, there's no way that you should want those things.
All right.
The truth is, you have nothing to be ashamed about. The truth is, I have body dysmorphia and I don't want these things. Period. Like, that's the story we need to get to. That is the neutral story. Because the way you're talking about it is, I have body dysmorphia. I don't want these things. And that means I'm bad. That means something about me. And I think what it means is, I'm very aware of what I want to work on for myself, not for him.
Right, for me.
Yeah, like I want you to try to think about like where we can get some wiggle room and all this emotion, because that's what you need right now, is you need compassion when the shame wants to come up and it wants to take the responsibility. This is not your responsibility. This was his choice. He had his reasons. He could have talked to you more. There's a thousand things he could have done different. He didn't. And you need to remind yourself, like, this, like, my body and my choices with it are very different. They do not, you're trying to connect two things. His cheating with that. They're not connected. They're just not. And you've got to be really honest with yourself about it. You have to be very willing to say to yourself, I have my shit that I have to work through for me. This does not cause cheating. Because I promise you, Mara, if body dysmorphia caused cheating, there would be a hell of a lot more going on in the world right now of it. Because most women have body dysmorphia. I have body dysmorphia. There's not a day I don't look in the mirror. I was doing tricep dips yesterday at the gym, and I was doing this, and I saw all the creepy skin on my arms in the mirror, and I was like, oh my God, I hope nobody is even looking. because it's so apparent that either like between getting older and loose skin, and like if body dysmorphia caused cheating, Chris would be out fucking somebody right now. Because I made up with it half the time. And it doesn't, and I don't even want you to say it's because I'm not having boom boom. That's not it. There are women in here right now who want to have sex. Their husbands don't want to have sex, and they're not cheating on their husbands. So I need you to just see this is not a cause and effect. Now, when you ask them about how to be with your feelings, this is how you be with it. That moment when you're feeling that shame, you need to just like literally, I want you to find something you can ground yourself first with. Like, get you a, aren't you the one that has plushies?
Yes, I have Ursula. She's been batting food out of my hand for the
All right.
past month and a half.
All right.
She's become my friend now, so.
Okay. I want you to find like either a nice blanket and one of your, it can be Ursula, it can be any plushie that you have, whatever it is. I remember we coached on plushies one time. I don't know why that stuck out in my brain. Of all the things I remember, that is one thing I remember. I want you to find something though that can help you feel safe. Because right now, food is kind of doing that. It's kind of helping you feel like it's
I
smoothing things
agree.
over and whatnot. So, I want you to find you something that you can put on first, and I want you to do the pause plus permission technique. I don't want you to just not eat, because not eating is helping you. We're just going to try to replace the helping technique, but I want you to give yourself permission to say, I'm going to sit with Ursula in my blanket or whatever you like for at least 5 minutes. Just 5 minutes is all I ask. And I can eat after that if I feel like I really need to, because that's not a bad thing. I know what it's coming from. It's probably coming from either in this moment, I'm feeling really mad, or I'm feeling really ashamed, or I'm feeling really guilty. I know that it's one of those things. And I want to train myself to be there for myself through this. And then do the grounding technique first. Then, before you decide to eat, I just want you to talk to yourself a little bit and just say, like, if this is shame, Corinne told me that my body dysmorphia and my lack of wanting to have boom boom doesn't cause affairs. What causes affairs is something in him. That was his choice. What do you feel guilty about?
I guess I feel guilty. Well, no, that's not the. I guess I feel guilty that the communication has dropped so much from our relationship, and we got kind of too comfortable. Would it be too comfortable in our relationship that we turned more like best friends because we've been married for 30 years? I don't know. There's a lot of different emotions too that I'm working on through this that I don't know.
Well, I mean, what I would invite you to tell yourself is that I can see where we became friends, but I don't need to feel guilty over that. I wasn't trying to do anything wrong. I want you to remember, guilt is an emotion that is alerting us to we're doing something wrong. So, like, if I go outside right now and a puppy is running through the backyard and I just drop kick it like a football, I should probably feel guilty. If I go to the grocery store and push an old man down because I'm in a hurry, I hope I feel guilty. Guilty is for guilt. Like, I do actually something wrong. And sometimes we just have to remind ourselves that sometimes we feel guilty for things that Like, oh, I don't need to feel guilty, but I am aware that we both fell into a friend pattern. And that's my choice to decide, knowing everything I know now about this marriage, do I want to work on it or not?
And the other thing too is that he was catfished. So not only is it an emotional ride, but it was a financial ride too. We lost a lot during that. And I guess you know, there is that rage of how could he have even thought about that? I mean, I saw it in one of the TLC programs, and oh, that'll never happen to me. Guess what?
Yeah, but like, what do you want to do? Watch TLC and then
No,
live on
no,
your
no,
guard and think all that
no,
shit's gonna. Right. So you don't need
no.
to feel
No,
bad
that's
about that.
just an example, you know, but it's just I told him we've had several discussions since this all happened, and you know, I said, you know, you never shared the finances with me, you know, you always would always say, well, why don't you do the bills? You know, that's what I want. I was perfectly able when he was in the hospital to manage everything. I made sure everything got paid and whatnot. And so I want to hope that things are going to change.
Okay.
Cause one, and I know I might get flack from this. Like everybody said, oh, you need to leave now. You need to do this. You need to do that. And I'm like,
Yeah.
I finally said to one of my best friends, I said, I can't think about that right now. I have so many other feelings right now that
Right.
take precedence over that,
I'm going
and
to tell
still
you right
does.
now that you, I want to just make sure you hear this. You are doing it right. You do have a lot of emotions and you do have a lot of feelings. And when you have a lot of feelings and a lot of emotions, it's hard to make decisions. And I think you're being really smart in saying, in this mindset where I know I have rage, shame, and guilt happening, I don't want to make my decisions from that because I'm likely not to make the best decisions for me. Now, that doesn't mean you stay, it doesn't mean you go. Doesn't mean anything. It means you're going to give yourself space and time to figure you out, and then you get to decide what you want to do. I promise you, and I don't give a shit what anybody in here says. I've been cheated on several times. I was not married for 30 years, but my first marriage, the guy cheated on me. The second guy that I got engaged to cheated on me. The third guy cheated on me. But I just dated. I just kept ratcheting it down to eventually get to where. What I do know is there's no one way to do it. And everybody in the world, Mara, is going to have an opinion for you. The only opinions I want you to hear from me is I think you're entitled to be mad. He hurt you. He lied. When people hurt, when they lie and they break your trust and stuff, you are entitled to be mad. You get to decide how long you want to be mad. You get to decide if it's a deal breaker or not. You get to decide how, like, you get to decide all of it for you. I just want you to really hear that part. And I also want you to hear the opinion of, if you want to take in what people offer you as advice, always remember they are offering you advice from their thoughts and feelings, but that doesn't always mean it's best for you. You will know. And I think that, and I wouldn't worry so much about the eating as much as I would just get really good at grounding yourself when you have your feelings and then deciding what you want to do. Like some days, you may be able to ground yourself and talk to yourself, and that be enough to get you through that feeling. You will have days where it will be too much. You won't be able to. Right now, I think the most important thing for you is to get into the habit of when feelings come on. I don't even need to know their name, but you probably know when you feel like shit.
It's like that little anxiety feeling, kind of like I said, you know that the storm's brewing and the lightning bolt is coming. So, and another one of my friends said that you need to feel safe. You need that. That's really what you need to be. And I hadn't really thought of that until she said it the other day. By the way, it's my first no BS bestie, Tracy Gronkowski, I will say that. And she just popped into my chat one night and was like, "What's going on?" And so we talked about it, and she's like, "You need to feel safe." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, yeah."
If that
That's
landed, then I will guarantee you that is the nice thing about when I want you to trust your intuition. You do know what's best for you. And you will know because you will hear people's opinions and it'll either throw a wall up or it will make you think like, oh yeah, okay. Like somehow that lands. And if she said you need safety, that's really good to hear that. When you have these feelings, you can ask yourself, I know what I need right now. I just need safety. And what could make me feel safe right now? And then also, that's where you can do some journaling, where you can write when you're not in the feelings. And you can write about like, if I was going to create safety for myself, if I was going to really feel safe, in this marriage, or if I'm going to feel really safe for the next month or the next week, the next day, whatever it is, here's what I need to feel that. And sometimes it's thoughts, sometimes it's grounding techniques, sometimes it's like, I want to know all the finances now. Like, I want to know all of it. And that will at least make me feel safe that way. You get to decide. I had a good friend of mine who'd been married at least 30 years. I forget how long they've been married. They were just like the pillar of our community. And he cheated on her for 2 years. She didn't know it. She found out. Their kids had all graduated from high school. And her divorce just finalized last month. And he had her quit her job while he was cheating on her, and she quit a 30-year career. She was left financially strapped, all kinds of stuff. So I've been helping her through some of it, and she decided to become an infidelity coach.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah, like she just decided, she's like, I'm going to help women get through this. Because it's not easy. And they tried again. They went through counseling. He just kept cheating. It was just like, there's all kinds of stuff. But she has been able to close that. I will just to give you hope. She was so upset for so long. She had periods where she felt like you. She felt really guilty. She felt she had a health scare. And she thought that that is why he'd end up cheating on her because she was real sick for a while. And then she was just angry, blazing angry over lots of things and devastated for her children and just, all kinds of stuff. She's on the other side now. Not friends, but she now is a friend to herself. That has been
And
the
I think that's where I'm starting to get to. It's been a long journey, and I don't harbor, well, I can't say that, no. So people would say, leave him, blah, blah, blah. But I also made that commitment when I married him 30 years ago, in sickness and in health, till death do us part. Now I've fulfilled that obligation. Luckily, it's not death do us part. But now, I've said, you cheat again, and that's it, I'm gone.
Okay.
And that's, as my mama used to say, just pull up your big girl panties and keep going. And that's what I've had to do, is just keep going. Listen to a lot of Brain Crabtree.
I think you're doing all the right things. Don't make it such a problem that you're eating. What I want you to do is say, like, the eating is signaling. And now that I'm kind of like not wanting to do the eating, it's signaling that I'm ready to take care of myself in new ways. And now all I gotta do is figure out the new ways I wanna take care of myself through this.
Right.
Cause I think
Yep.
that's really happening. All
Okie
right. I'll
dokie,
be
my
thinking
friend.
about you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You hang in there, okay?
I will.
All righty.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, let me grab these couple of questions. We actually have a maintenance call, don't we? Let me hopefully don't like run over. Hang on, let me look at the time. Yeah, 2 o'clock. All right, I'm gonna answer these two questions. Then there went that lunch I was gonna eat. Corinne, can you make a Facebook post later that tells us the actual name of the digital journal or show a pic of what the app icon looks like that she works with ChatGPT that she was talking about? You just use ChatGPT. Like there's no. It's just the chat GPT. I use it on my computer, so there's no app. I have to go through Chrome. I can't do it on Safari, but if you just type in chat GPT in the Chrome, it'll bring up, you can set up an account and you can get a free account. And that's what I use. I don't use chat GPT on my phone. You can, but I don't use it there. The App Store, I'll just tell you real quick. I've got it on my phone, Whisper. It's all right, it's the wrong spelling. It's WISPR flow, and it looks like a W with little bars. I don't know. Can y'all see that? I can't see me. It's on the far right. I'm just holding it there for a minute so anybody who can screenshot it. But I'll try to screenshot it and post it in Facebook. But it's WISPR and then flow. And that's the one you want. And it looks like a letter W with, it's a black background with white and bars. Like it looks like it made the W in a bunch of little bars. I've been eating at night and I don't really know why. I think I just want it and it'll taste good. But I've listened to you long enough to know I have an underlying need that's unmet. How do I go about figuring out what's going on? All right. So this is the most unfun way, but when you really don't know, the only way to find out is to not eat and then just sit there and listen. Like, don't eat and just be like, I wonder why I want to eat so bad. And your brain will keep saying, but it tastes really good. Come on. It'll say something like, you've had a long day. That's like really good insight. If it says you've had a really long day, you say, like, oh, why does a long day mean I should eat? And then usually, like if you just ask little questions like that, that's going to get to the root of it. And you said, I just want it and it'll taste good. It's like, yeah, it's going to taste like that's a like it's just the truth. Like I'm wanting it. There's a reason why I want it. And it's not like you're going to go eat things that don't taste good. So like it tasting good is like your brain's like first level of saying like this tastes good. And it's like, okay, I know it's going to taste good, but like, really ask yourself, but why do I really want it? I know it's going to taste good because I'm always going to pick tasty things. But when I eat it, what am I going to get to feel? And usually, when you ask questions like that, then your brain will tell you exactly why, especially if you're holding it back from what it really wants. That's the fastest way to find out. Now, there is another way to find out. Which is you can like literally eat the food, and in lifetime, you journal while you're eating it. I'm eating this because, I'm eating this because, and you just keep, you do not eat it in front of the television. You do not eat it the way you normally do. Like you go and you sit down and you eat it in what we call like a clinical way. So you might sit at your table. It'll feel really uncomfortable, but that's the point. The point is to make it really uncomfortable so your brain can whine about why you're doing it. You're just trying to get your brain to whine. That's really all we want to do. Now, the other thing you can do is like once you eat something, like the next day, backtrace. What happened during my day? Like if I was not planning to eat something, like what are the chain of events of the day? Was I really tired when I ate? Was I emotional? Was there anything going on? Because if there's nothing other than I just want it and it tastes so good, you do not have an emotional eat going on. You have a habit that has to be broken. Let me say that again. It's not a ha it's not an emotional eat anymore. Now we're into the habit, which means you're going to want to do it because you've done it for so long. Which means for a few days, you have to tell yourself, like, oh, we're not doing that tonight. And it's gonna feel really uncomfortable simply because I want it, because I always do it. And this is where we talk to our brain. We don't like say, you can't have that. You don't wanna do command language of like, no, we're not eating. You wanna go to your brain and say, I know why you're so uncomfortable. This is just like if I broke my right hand, you would want to use your left. I use that example all the time because it's so true. Even if I broke my right hand, broke it, and it would hurt to write with it, every single time I would use my left hand, what would I be? Thrilled and elated? Content? No, I'd be pissed. I'd be wanting to use my right hand. I'd be whining that I can't. I'd be throwing a hissy fit. That is what your brain does when it has to break a habit. It does not want to do that because it's like, oh, I got to do something new. I don't want to do new things. I want to do old things. I want to do the things we always do because that's just really easy. So don't anticipate that simply because you're going to do this, that all of a sudden your brain is going to be like, all right, we're just breaking habits. Let's go. This will be a good time. No, it's going to be like TV's better with ice cream. Are you kidding? We've been doing it for 30 years. Why is this year any different? Like it's going to want to do it. And the way to for it to not feel as bad is to like do some fun things while you're breaking a habit. Like one woman one time told me she was going to break the habit of eating when she came home from work. She was a school teacher. And I said, all right, well, you know, if we're not going to eat anymore when we get home, if this is like something we're really going to break as a habit, and it's truly not emotional. Like, what else are you going to do? She's like, well, I'm always saying I'm going to clean my toilets. And I'm like, are you kidding? You have been eating candy bars after school for a long time as a way to transition. And you think the best way to break a habit of eating candy is to go clean a toilet? And then she said, well, all right, I won't clean toilets. I'll mow my yard. It needs to be mowed. And I was like, no. So when you are going to replace a habit like eating that is for shits and giggles, is for fun, then the replacement needs to be shits and giggles and for fun. It can't be harder than what you do. Like, don't make that mistake. Now, it might not be as fun as ice cream. It might not be as fun as candy, but it needs to be something that you could at the very least, say to yourself, all right, but at least I'm going to be doing this. I can find some joy out of this. All right. We have, how do you know you hit on your root cause? You don't. You never know. You know when you know? When, like, the habit kind of just stops asking. Like, it does not matter if you hit the root cause. Sometimes a habit will have several root causes, and you'll untangle one, and that's just enough for the other ones to become non-important. Don't get too hung up on it being the exact thing or whatever. Take guesses. Work through it. Most of the time, whatever you guess it is exactly it. And it's very rare that an overeating habit, like whenever you are coping, like let's say you always eat at night, you probably always eat at night over the same fucking sad thing. Now, when you have something happen, like what happened with Mara, she's got this new circumstance that has happened. If she was overeating in the past, it wasn't for this. Now she's overeating because she's got all this guilt and shame and anger that she doesn't know what to do with. And it's like we untangled several things of like she was feeling ashamed where she had connected. Oh, me having body dysmorphia, I feel ashamed because now I'm trying to explain why he cheated on me. That must be it. It's like, no, he cheated on her because he got online and he found someone who gave him attention. Not because she wasn't giving him attention, but because he went out and did something. That is the only reason we need to know. That's it. So don't get caught up in needing to know the exact reason. I guarantee you, all of you, whatever you think is the reason, 99.9% of the time, that is the reason. Sometimes we just don't want to admit it. We want it to be more complicated because we found a reason that we don't want to work on. Now that happens a lot. All right. Let me see if I can just stop the recording because we need to roll. Yep. All right.